Check, check, check.
Hello?
Is it me you're looking for?
I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile. Oh, yeah, we are recording.
That's great.
Is that recorded?
Yeah, that was.
I'm not the best Lionel Richie tribute. Don't hire me. I'm not the worst, though.
No, you're not the worst. I'd be the worst.
Luckily, we'll never know the answer.
This show contains badass material and foul f-ing language. Some people may find offensive. What else did you expect?
Nostalgia really whips the llama's ass.
Welcome to Bitch Watch.
Hi, I'm Sly.
I'm Witsy.
And we're two bitches watching TV.
We're a recap and shit talk show.
That's right. We watch hours and hours and hours of TV, so you don't have to.
You can listen and laugh along with us everywhere you listen to podcasts and find us on Instagram and Twitter at BitchWatchPod.
Is our show original? No.
Entertaining? We hope so. This is Bitch Watch.
Hey guys, I'm Darcy, founder of Spirit.
And I'm Kelly, the Chief Technical Officer of Spirit.
Back in 2011, we formed the Supernatural Paranormal Investigations and Research Institute, searching for answers to mysterious things that were happening in our little corner of Canada.
And we haven't stopped searching for those answers ever since. Join us on our podcast, Canadian Spirit, as we dive into all of Canada's most famous and forgotten paranormal mysteries. Examine the evidence and try to figure out what might be behind Canada's ghosts, cryptids, and UFO encounters.
In Canadian Spirit, you'll get a peek behind the curtain and see for yourself what being a paranormal investigator is really like, and learn something about Canadian history, which isn't as boring as it sounds.
Even if it is, we're a pair of chuckle fucks, so we'll do our best to make it entertaining.
So come along for the ride and discover for yourself what makes the land of maple and hockey so wonderfully weird.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, you know, wherever you find your podcasts. And remember,
raccoons are aliens, werewolves are perverts, and ghosts are just downright rude sometimes.
I was at work the other day, and we went to a work dinner, and like, you know, worked with a bunch of young folks, and they're like wanted to go and like sing karaoke afterwards, and I'm
young
the old
folks.
Yeah, they're all in their 20s, man, and I was like, no, I'm the old guy, I don't want to go, like, you know, man, I just think, you know, they couldn't do it. But so they were sending videos along like afterwards, and I'm like, oh yeah, so who sings that song that you were covering? Like, so and so. Okay, yeah, let's keep it that way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Who sings Hotel California? The Eagles. Let's keep it that way.
Yeah, let's handle that.
Jeez. It's funny that you mentioned like karaoke and that, and also about like being older and how you don't really want it. I don't know. It's just not something you're kind of into or comfortable with. Because like you were there. I was telling this story the other day. Really showed like the chasm or the age gap has like widened a bit, because we went to the Lion's Head.
Yeah.
Because I always love to do Eminem. Because I like to rap or whatever, karaoke. But I went up to do My Name Is, but it hadn't been years since I've done it. And I was laughing, man. Like halfway through the first verse, I realized what a mistake I'd made. Like, if you know the lyrics to My Name Is, it's like, it really shows the times have changed. And I'm like, talking about like faster than a fat bitch that sat down too fast or something. Yeah. I was like, wow, wait, this is not good.
Yeah.
And the crowd just like sat and watched me stone faced. It was like, oh my God.
And wasn't it on like, you know, like,
what
day was it?
It was like, I think it was something about women's like
International
Women's
Appreciation Day or something like that. And he's like singing about fat bitches sitting down too fast.
Kyle was 100% tone deaf that day.
Oh, God, and then Don's like, so what did you do? And I was like, I got to commit to the bit. You got to do the whole thing. You can't give up.
Showmanship, George.
I kept driving the bus.
Yeah.
People kept ringing the bell.
You're Batman.
Yeah. Yes. I am Batman. Yeah.
But yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow.
But man, we've had some really good times at karaoke. And we've done like the hip hop karaoke and that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We've knocked that out of the park.
Yeah, that was definitely fun. The OPP one. And then I got like really, really drunk. And then we tried to do, was it me and you or me?
You and I did.
The Dr. Dre.
Forgot About Dre.
Yeah, and I was pretty drunk at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, what was the first one we did together?
We did Intergalactic.
Intergalactic. Yes. Yeah. Good times.
It was good times.
Yeah.
Artists was with many, many great albums.
Many.
Oh, this is a good segue.
Trying to segue. Yeah. I was like, how do I
segue? Yeah,
like,
so this...
The nudge, nudge segue. Like, come on.
Come on, pick up what I'm putting down. Yeah, so this week we are going to be talking about Perfect Album. Now, a lot of people love songs and they love bands because of their songs. But then there's also the acknowledgement that there are individual albums that are so perfect that each song makes up how great the experience is to listen to the album from beginning to end. Yeah.
Yes. Something we don't see a lot of anymore is the album as an the whole album as an experience. We're in a very single driven industry, it seems. Mm-hmm. Like this with, like, you know, rap and pop being predominantly the way that music, the popular music right now. But, like, yeah, that's how they seem to consume it. It's just by Spotify and singles. And
sure.
Even playlists are all just, yeah, like singles. And but yeah, like, long, you know, the days of, like, when did that end, do you think?
I don't know. But, you know, the, like, a pot-driven, single-driven industry has always existed. But the end of a full album experience, I think, ended with the beginning of downloading and streaming.
Mm. Yeah. Because you had to buy the entire album to get that single. Well, I mean, I guess you could buy the single CD, but they were generally like, what, $5 for that? So you'd be like, well, I could spend $15 and get an entire album, right?
That's right.
So you'd get that. And then from that, you'd probably discover other songs that were on there that were potentially just as good as the singles, but weren't released as the
singles. That was the hope.
That was the hope.
Sometimes better. Yeah. And you're like, what the? How is this song not a single?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Aqua.
Yeah. Dr. Jones, Dr. Jones.
So, yeah, to that point, I mean, I think what restored some of that experience is vinyl. You know, the resurgence in vinyl that's happened over the last 15 years kind of reestablished that experience of not only listening, but enjoying and actually having to flip sides.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there are some artists who are able to capture that, but I think some artists that have a really, really strong album in today's environment, I guess, or today's climate of album listening, they play it safe, and every song is quote unquote the same.
Yeah.
So that if you like the sound of what they do, you're just going to like the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's bigger and nothing's quieter. Yeah, it's just the same and it's flatline. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of go through what we consider our favorites. And actually, due to John's recommendation, we're going to do something that we normally do with our movies, which are like double features. They're themed, and we are going to do the same, but for albums. So this is actually going to be really fun.
I'll try. We'll try. We just we were informed of this category grouping just like 10 minutes ago.
Don't reveal our secrets. Yeah, really.
So I have some already picked, but yeah, I'll have to. We'll have to think some on the
fifth. Oh, I think we got them. I mean, we're all music fans.
And it's like, this is all just personal and it's like subjective. But like, yeah, the idea of like an album you can listen to front to back. There's no bum songs. No dud songs, no bad songs. Like, yeah, the whole thing is an experience.
Yes.
Now, I can say that there might be songs which are like, that's not my favorite one that's on there, but you don't skip the song. No. It's like, you can still, like, you still go through it because it maybe leads into another song or sets you up for the next one, right?
Exactly.
But, like, not every song on there is like, oh my God, that's a pure hit right there. It's just, yeah, like, it works in the whole context of the album.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And it's about that big picture,
yeah,
viewing. It's not about per song, but of course, each song is great, making a great album.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, now that we've established that.
What are you drinking?
I decided I didn't go craft beer. I just had a hankering for some old school Irish favorites. So I grabbed the Irish Taster Pack, and right now I am drinking a Kilkenny, which is an Irish cream stout. It's so good.
It is good. You know, it's funny. This week I started drinking stout because of the change of the season.
Yeah, it's just like that heavy. It's like eating stew. You don't eat stew in the summertime.
What are you, a psycho? No, you don't drink a double IPA while mowing the lawn in 40 plus degree humidity, ball stuck to leg. Yeah. No.
Ew.
Let's see what you get. Oh, nitro or something.
Oh, go. That was literally a perfect one. And this one you dump. You just dump it right in. Oh, look at that.
I forget where I was. That's some good.
Some ASMR.
I was going to say.
We are some ASMR.
That's some good ASMR right there.
You know what coworker of mine likes listening to us just for our bassy tones?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just the rumble.
That's some bassy tones.
I forget where. I think I was at like one of my family's functions and I just turned the Guinness can like directly upside down.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? And they got like, it was just funny. They're just like, what are you doing? No, oh, no, no, it's going to overflow. I'm like, no, it's not.
Trust me. Amateur.
I'm an amateur.
Yeah. I'm an expert, a.k.a. alcoholic. Yeah. On the stout front, I am drinking the Sea Piper Coffee Stout by Rare Bird. And it is a craft beer, 5%. And it's actually very good, I will say. There are definitely the chocolatey notes, as it indicates here, but not like it's a well-balanced coffee stout, I find. And sometimes they're not. And Kyle, what are you drinking, my friend?
Well, I'm keeping it. I'm keeping it healthy. Not so much healthy, but this month I've decided to go off alcohol for a month. Don't everybody panic. It's okay. I'll be fine. So today I'm drinking. You just got to give the liver a rest. You know?
Instead of worrying about your alcoholism, we're worried that you're
what
off
are you
alcohol.
Doing?
Yeah, exactly. Are you all right?
So right now I got a Carlsberg, alcohol free, and I like how even they still put. Wait, can I read it or is it too dark? Oh yeah, they still put by appointment to the Royal Danish Court on their non-alcohol beers. Like it's like, is that their logo or something? Or
it's probably possibly.
Or their
it's trademark.
Slogan? Yeah. Anyways, it's not the best. It's because I do have, so I'm waiting to drink it. It's in the fridge. Upstreet Brewing from PEI make a non-alcoholic.
That's a good one.
Called Libra, and that's very good. But yeah, I just picked these up because I never tried it, and it tastes like nothing. Do you know what I mean? Those non-alcoholic.
You know what it tastes like? It tastes like Metro Center $8 watered down beers.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, kind of off old stinky Gus's draft.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The cat hasn't been cleaned
the
in
swill.
A long time.
Yeah.
How I kind of actually planned out my double. Features, double listens, whatever it is, was I decided to choose a modern perfect album,
okay,
and then a classic perfect album.
Great idea.
So because I want to, like, you know, going back to what we said is, like, you know, this day and age, like, doesn't seem like that there's, you know, a lot of modern, like, albums really that a lot of people listen to singles, but I've actually found quite a few that through the singles actually ended up liking the whole entire album. So my first kind of double feature is Pop Perfection.
Nice.
So I like all types of music. I love pop music. I think it's, you know, I don't give a shit what people think of me. And that actually, you know, kind of shows you, yeah, my zero fucks given on my first pick. Because you know what? My zero fucks given on my modern pick is actually Future Nostalgia by Dua Lipa.
Hey.
That album is fucking perfect, beginning to end. Yeah. Like every song on that is absolutely amazing and one of the best mixed albums in the last 10, 15 years that I've ever heard.
It's funny because like I've even, Dua Lipa is just not something I would regularly listen to, but I think we were here.
Yeah.
And we turned on, I forget who made that video.
It was the NPR.
The NPR. Oh yeah, it was Tiny Desk Concerts during the pandemics when they couldn't go to the thing. But so these artists would record these like 3 to 4 song sets, and Dua Lipa did one, and she had a live band, and she had backup singers, and you could tell it was singing live. And man, they ruled, like they threw down, like it was perfect sounding. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I think I like Dua Lipa now.
Well, that was my first introduction to her, was by you showing me that. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, found the album on, like, you know, Tidal and started to listen to it. I was like, holy shit, man. Like every fucking song on this, like I had
bangers.
I still have it. Like, it's just, it's on repeat. I'll listen to it, you know, not every week, but now, you know, still regularly. So that's my modern pick for my pop perfection, my classic pick. And I know this is probably going to be in yours too, Matt, is Tears for Fears, Songs from the Big Chair.
Well, my friend, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That album what else can I say about it? It is perfect. Every single song, the way that it comes in on Shout and the transitions and blending of songs and the you know, almost like, I don't know what to call it, but whether it's the concept album kind of vibe of, you know, introducing themes from songs that are later on in the album, in songs that are in like earlier on in the album, like it's perfect, and the singles off it are perfect. But so yeah, those are my pop.
That's a monster album.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, so yes, you are right. Tears for Fears, Songs from the Big Chair is actually a part of my my pop perfection selection. First one of the double feet. So to your point, Broken contains the motifs and themes that are in other songs, leading into, of course, one of the biggest singles, not only of the album, but of the 80s, Head Over Heels.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Love that song.
But like just looking at the track list on that, it's Shout, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Head Over Heels. Those are the three singles, but the other songs are not fillers. They're all killer.
Exactly.
So good.
Yep. That's Sum 41 album?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so...
Which is not a perfect album.
No, not. So to, as a counterpoint, I don't have a modern to go with it. I have a retro, but I think this speaks for itself, and it is, of course, Prince's Purple Rain. That album is just perfect.
Yeah,
again, is. Another... banger of an album. It's not just a soundtrack, it's an album.
Yeah. But what a fucking soundtrack to like,
wow.
I mean, it is a, like I say, I've only ever seen like the movie like once.
Sure.
I probably wouldn't watch it again, but man, the album, holy cow.
I've never even seen the movie or listened to the album.
You've never listened to Purple Rain?
I know the song Purple Rain.
Yeah.
I must know other songs on it.
Yeah, Let's Go Crazy.
Okay, yeah.
Take Me With You. Mm-mm. Yeah, and the songs that you don't know fit so perfectly the album, as soon as you put it on, it's like what you and I talk about with Footloose. It's a perfect party album. You put it on, not one person is, you know, not grooving to it.
Yeah.
Every song is a banger on it. When Doves Cry, Darling Nikki, I Would Die For You.
I would die for you.
I just love the fact that you and I both wanted to break out into that at the same time.
It's just so good.
And obviously, Purple Rain. So. That album speaks for itself, but what he said, there was a quote, and it was like, Purple Rain is the most purple thing he ever did.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense, because purple was so associated with Prince because of that album.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, he was a megastar.
Oh, yeah. But even just looking at that cover.
Look at this cover.
Like, look at Prince on a massive purple.
Prince straddling that motorcycle.
Yeah, massive purple motorcycle in a, like, misty alley with some, you know, woman in a doorway just, like, you know. Yeah,
but, like, look at this framing, like, of all, like, the flowers on the side of it. And, like, this album not only exists just musically, but visually. Like, look at it.
Yeah.
Like this album and the songs on it fit exactly with what you're about to see. It's dirty, it's grungy, and it's popular.
But look at the stark contrast between that and the album the sleeve for, you know, Songs from the Big Chair, which is just a black and white picture of the two guys,
the two dudes,
and then it's there's photographs on the inside.
Yep.
Of, you know, them obviously touring around the world and that stuff, but the on the outside it's just black and white with a black back. Like,
I've always liked this photo, and it's of Roland. He's sitting in bed, and the newspapers make the bedding and the headboard.
Oh yeah.
Now there could be some comment.
Yeah.
But in any case, those are my pop perfection of perfect album.
Wicked.
All right. I don't have two picks each, but for my entry for pop perfection. Now, what's interesting about this pick is that most people would think that I'm going to pick a certain album when I say the artist, Michael Jackson. So, but then we were talking about, like, I guess unofficial rules of a perfect album. Thriller, obviously amazing, classic, one of the best albums ever.
I think I know that album.
The second half, or the second, the last third of Thriller is, I just don't listen to it. Do you know what I mean?
A little bit of a snoozer.
Human Nature is a good song. But there was another one, I forget the name of it now. Somebody you know. I forget the name of the song. Yeah. Anyways, after like Beat It or Billie Jean, I just lose interest. So my pick for pop perfection is the follow-up to Thriller. And an album, I still remember having that vinyl in my collection. My parents had it. It's, of course, Bad, with like the... It's simultaneously one of the cheesiest, but also one of the coolest, like, badass covers ever. Michael Jackson in that, like, full leather thing, you know? But when I was just going through the list...
It does live up to the double meaning of the word bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's spray painted bad, too, the text there. But yeah, like, just looking through the songs, I just lead off with bad. The way you make me feel. Speed demon. Speeding on the freeway, gotta get away. You know, remember that song?
Yeah.
Liberian Girl. Now, Just Good Friends, you know, it, and Another Part of Me. But like we were talking about how those transition, like the way you feel when you listen to an album, that leads into Man in the Mirror. I just can't stop loving you. Dirty Diana, Smooth Criminal, and Leave Me Alone. Like, come on.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Those are all just great songs.
The Way You Make Me Feel has probably the grooviest beat of all time.
Dun, 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 dun.
Seriously.
And it's almost like Tears for Fears, the...
It's like almost so backbeat.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
It's so good.
It's so backbeat.
But the production on the drums,
Quincy Jones
on that album, though I mean, Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones, what a pairing. Like, you talk about movies, you got like Tim Burton and Danny Elfman and Spielberg and William, and then you've got producers and artists that also work side by side. Like, I we might touch on it later, but obviously what Bob Rock and Metallica accomplished together, like, those are like perfect pairing. I'm going to touch on another one that's obviously a giveaway, but yes.
Awesome.
What, that one, you mean?
For pairings in the heavier
category. Yeah.
But in any case, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, pop perfection.
Now, do you have an honorable mention, maybe just from off top of your head a double?
I'm trying to think, like, because like me, my I do listen to pop now, but it not like I used to.
But it doesn't have to be modern.
No, like, I know.
It can just be something else that you're like, holy shit, like, that's really good.
Yeah.
Well, if it's not coming to you, I guess you don't have...
That's what I mean. Like, I can think of... But now I'm like stuck in that 80s zone where I can think of albums or I can think of songs, especially artists that I loved, but I can't remember really the whole...
I can think of so many 80s albums that...
Like, honestly, actually, okay, well...
So many.
I can think of stuff like... Make It Big by Wham. She's So Unusual by Cyndi Lauper.
These are great albums.
Yeah. So like,
I have both of those at home.
I have both in there.
Yeah, She Bop and Time After Time, of course. Girls Just Want to Have Fun. I mean, that's a great album.
So Time After Time, I was talking about this not too long ago. I think the true testament of a good song is if it can be played in multiple genres and it still be amazing. Time After Time is one of those songs.
Oh, yeah.
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 On that note, what do you have for your next category, John?
Well, so complete opposite of pop perfection is Metal Magic.
Yeah!
It sounded like the what's it called?
The Who?
David Caruso
From CSI.
Yeah, that's right.
Won't get fooled again.
Yeah.
No, so the Who is not included in this.
They're not metal.
They're not metal at all.
Oh my God. I have them. Okay. I have one.
You have one?
I got it.
For metal?
Yeah, I'm just going to go. I'll go one for each of these categories.
We're very composed and planned. Because
you guys went way above and beyond.
Oh, yeah.
I came with like three albums, but now I'm like trying to think.
Thought of the double feature on the drive home. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to do that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So my two, so my modern and my classic one actually aren't separated by too long of a period. My classic one is not a classic metal album, you know, by the classic metal album standards, I don't think. But so
how old is it?
It's only 20 years old.
So that by definition is called classic.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so it's a classic metal album. Yeah. Okay. So my modern one is Ohms by Deftones.
Look at you.
Man, that, like, when that album came out last year, every fucking song on that hits. The riffs are utterly amazing. The choruses are massive. And
the grooves
are just always there, man. And so it been one of those albums that has been full, like, not just individual songs. The entire album has been consistently on my playlist and played the whole way through since it came out last year.
You've done some bass covers.
I've done two bass covers on that, yeah.
And I was just thinking, especially that song you did the cover, I forget the name of the song now, that you... Ooh, but the, you know, I don't know how underrated he is, but man, like Chino, one of the great original vocalists. 100%. Like, he always delivers. He always comes up with really interesting stuff, you know, especially in shines on Ohms for sure.
There's been like those times when you're listening to a song and you, like, you and I have had those, like when we've been like playing stuff and like, or like writing stuff, and you just hit that, like that perfect note, and like the hair just stands up and you're like, oh man, that melody. That's, yeah. I got that on so many of the choruses, during Ohms, because like the verses would just be brutally heavy, wicked riffs, like amazing grooves. And then you get to this like just stunning chorus and it just absolutely floors me.
And that's something that I found Deftones grew into, but perfected.
Yeah.
So when you listen to the earlier stuff, the fundamentals are there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until White Pony did you start to hear like this band become, oh, this is like a festival band now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
the local band from California with, you know, turntables and metal guitars are now
a new metal band.
So that's the other thing too, is that, you know, very unfortunate, the new metal moniker like really holds like a stigma against itself, but although
yeah,
takes us back to a time and a place. So, I mean, Round the Fur is one of the greatest,
yeah,
grooviest alt metal albums, but I don't consider it new metal in the sense that it does, it's not Korn, it's not Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
It's something all by itself.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I know we're going to kind of go on off on a tangent here, but when I think of new metal, I think of very cheesy, like almost forgettable like stuff. But I know like Korn was lumped into that. I know that Deftones were lumped in that. But when I think of new metal, I think of Puddle of Mud and like Crazy Town. And like,
yeah, it turned into just the throwaway. the rap metal hybrid.
Well, it was a paint by numbers, pop driven mentality, where the industry was saying, this is really profitable right now. Let's just go with that. Mm. And I mean, its legacy hit its peak and sealed its fate during Woodstock 99.
Yeah.
I mean, that right there, that's the culture that supported the new metal vibe. And unfortunately, that does kind of take you back to when that happened. I think that's its time and place of when new metal was at its peak, but new metal in the fluff throwaway, oh my God, like self-aware parody of itself. Because I think new metal is not the proper term even for those that belong to it. Like if you want to give credit to someone, you don't call them new metal.
Yeah. Mm. The fact that System of a Down is lumped in with like, you know, fucking Puddle of Mud and these guys, when they are so fucking left field compared to them, that it's, you're like you said, it's a paint by numbers. You're painting with such a broad brush that you can't like.
Yeah. It's just like, it sounds heavy, but it sounds funky. You've got rap elements. You've got screaming elements. Oh, let's just consider it new metal.
Yeah.
And I think that was just the ignorance of marketing, and it worked though, because you know, look at the Ozfest tours, you look at those sampler CDs that came out. If you were a kid listening to heavy music in the late 90s and you liked new metal, alternative metal, whatever you want to call it, you had the pick of the litter. Like you could literally put your hands on everything at that point, when metal never got the credit. But it also killed itself very quickly, because when you and I did that episode, we were looking at dates of new metal, we were surprised at how short of a window that truly was of good, worthwhile new metal. So not to hijack the conversation, literally when we're talking about Deftones and we're talking about new metal, they are a product of not meeting what new metal kind of discredits the bands that are labeled under it. I'm trying to search for the words for it, but like they are not new metal, but they were considered new metal. And I think that they're an important band of that time period. But when you're talking about an album like Ohm, they've already reached that peak where they are their name brand.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're a household name.
Yeah. So my second pick, my classic then, is actually 22 years old. I thought it actually came out a little bit later than it did. And you know what? I think these guys are lumped into the new metal category as it is.
Okay. What? 22 years ago?
Wait a minute. Okay, so that's 99?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez.
It is. Oh, my Seven Dust.
Oh my God. Look at you. What a great pick.
That album is perfect.
Denial.
Denial.
Waffle.
Yeah, you got like, look at the track listing. So Home, Denial, Head Trip, Insecure, Reconnect, it Waffle, Trip, Rumblefish, Licking Cream, Grass, Crumbled, Feeling So, Grasshopper, and Bender. One of my favorite fucking, like...
Wow. Let's do a cover sometime.
Oh,
let's
my
do
God,
a cover.
Yes.
I mean, I know that song already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
that's wicked.
It's funny,
I mean,
like...
How the album opens.
I know, yeah.
And then...
Yeah, he's one of the best drummers in metal for sure. Like he has like unparalleled groove ability, you know.
And, oh wow, yeah.
And it goes back to like it's very much the same vein as the Deftones, big choruses mm-hmm. that are like just like so you got these crazy like, you know, staccato guitar riffs like
yep.
where everything is locked in together and then just these big open chords throughout the choruses and then
think of Denial.
Yeah.
Denial seems had to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
And like all memorable.
Licking Cream with the lead singer from Skunk Anansie. Like, you know, I mean that oh my God. Like that I just knocked the microphone because it's so amazing. Like,
my hands have to move when I talk about it.
That's nostalgia speaking
actually,
right there.
Bender with Chino from the Deftones. Like,
slow it down. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great chorus.
I remember, so again, going back to 90s metal experiences, growing up in Canada, we had our own version of what was considered a late night talk show, and that was Mike Bullard.
Hmm.
Open mic with Mike Bullard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was no good. But he had...
No bueno.
No, I was going to say that.
But he had Seven Dust on, and they played Waffle.
Oh, yeah.
And I recorded that, and that was a part of my, like, video comp of, like, what I would record from, like, any kind of late-night TV, be it Tom Green, Mike Bullard, or Loud. And I kept that one, because it was so good. Like, so it's perfect, though. Yeah. Like, but then... You speed ahead even 15 years, and bands are doing breakdowns. They were doing breakdowns before we were doing breakdowns.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, would you call Seven Dust gent?
No,
no. But
they helped to, I guess, in a way, like because they were doing like you said breakdowns, but they were their verses. Like it was just like and like that's the Seven Dust sound
to be.
Yeah,
you know
and
where. Chugging it. Yeah. Everything was chugging it, but they had groove. And I think that they're criminally underrated.
Oh, my God.
And even their singles, not the full albums, but the singles that they've produced since Home are still fucking amazing.
Yeah. I'm constantly surprised. I'm just confused and surprised that Seven Dust aren't bigger than they are. I mean, to me, they're amazing, and I love them. And they've definitely had success. I know they had those problems with, like their label or something when they first, like he was like accounting, he was stealing from them or something happened where their deal went bad or the record deal. But man, like Seven Dust have always produced consistently great stuff. I don't know why they're not huge. I just don't understand.
And when I went to see them, they opened up for Godsmack here in Halifax.
Yeah.
And I've seen Godsmack before and I like Godsmack, but my God, when you see Seven Dust, you're like, man, this band's fucking tight.
You watch Seven Dust and then you're like, how do you follow that? Like, yeah, man. Anyway, that's my second pick.
Very cool.
That's a good pick.
All right. My metal magic, and you know I'm a metalhead.
Yeah. Really?
Through and through.
You?
So when I think about what's a perfect metal album, there's a lot of great metal moments. Just like in horror, there's a lot of great horror moments, but does it make it a great movie or is it a great scene?
Mm-hmm.
And very rarely... do all of the thing come together in this perfect package? The band writing amazing songs, the band performing perfectly, the producer capturing and producing it perfectly, and then it coming out at the right time. And it continues and has a legacy that exists to this day. And I consider this to be one of the best perfect metal albums of all time. And it is, of course, Rain and Blood.
Yeah, okay.
They're track for track, dude. All killer. They're all amazing. Angel of Death.
Look at these guys. Look at these young guns.
Look. Okay, you got Angel of Death, Piece by Piece, Necrophobic, Altar Sacrifice, Jesus Saves. That's just side one of like, when this came out, this was on tape, it was on record, and then goes into Criminally Insane. Starts out with that. Like, what a great way to open up the second side. Like, all right, okay, I can calm down again. Like, this is the best, like, 33 minutes you've ever spent in your life. And every song is amazing. Now, when I was talking about producers and artists, it's Rick Rubin and Slayer. Mm-hmm. There's never been a better pairing for a metal couple.
Yeah.
I mean, Terry Date and Deftones, Terry Date and Pantera yeah. obviously, are solid. And as much as I love Pantera, I was a Dime fan more than anything.
Look at your coaster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You see this? So Kyle's using a coaster where it's Bob Ross and he's painting the Rain and Blood album cover.
This might be the South. Oh, no. Is it the South of Heaven?
Nope, that's Rain and Blood.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yep.
I did not bring South of Heaven because it is not Rain and Blood. And as much as I love the songs War Ensemble, Dead Skin Mask, and Seasons in the Abyss, from Seasons in the Abyss, mm-hmm. In the Abyss is not Rain and Blood. Anyway, this is, I mean, it's legendary. Yeah. When you talk about like classic metal albums that are big and guitar driven albums, obviously Master Puppets, Ride the Lightning, Kill 'Em All, you know, like the early Metallica stuff are amazing. But when you talk about an album with just no let, like it doesn't let up.
Yeah.
It goes the entire way.
The whole time.
So I'm having a really hard time to come up with a pairing for this.
Okay.
Now I've got one of my favorite album of all time, as discussed on the show, and as anyone who knows me, it's Marilyn Manson, Antichrist Superstar. But do I consider that a metal album? It's not truly a metal album by category. It's a concept album. But I do have it with me anyway, just for observing. It's a great album.
The alternate cover. The strange, that's a, such a strange cover.
Yeah, it's not bizarre.
bizarre.
Yes. However, I think for me, when I'm trying to take myself out of what do I like, what do I listen to, but what do I not skip? And I do have to select Rob Zombie, Hellbilly Deluxe.
Nice.
And it's a very bizarre album for me to get behind, I think, as a metalhead, because I've always been like the purist in a way.
I love what does it say? Can I see the
13 cadaverous tales or something like that?
Oh. Let me 13 tales of cadaverous cavorting inside the Spook Show International.
The Spook Show International.
Yeah, and you get, you know, like a half-naked cherry zombie in there.
Oh, yeah, there she is.
Great. It was a toss-up. It was either that or White Zombie, Astrocreep 2000.
Astrocreep 2000.
Yeah, I'm more of an Astrocreep guy for sure.
Sure. Yeah. But there's something different about this album. And I think what did it for me with Rob Zombie, Hellbilly Deluxe, was that it's got so much of a horror element to it that the songs go beyond dun 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 dun, which is a great groove, but is almost on every song on Astrocreep 2000.
That's true.
Which I love.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's something different on Hellbilly Deluxe that song for song.
And it's like so horror themed.
Well, I mean, you've got Super Beast, Dragula, Living Dead Girl. I love Demonoid Phenomenon. I've already done my Spook Show Baby twice.
I love that show.
How to Make a Monster. So it's he's almost captured the spirit of black metal, where you record like a full band with one shitty mic in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
How to Make a Monster, Baby. How to Get It On. But it's like, nothing
so many
is,
babies.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing individual about that track. It's just like record it all together as a mush, which is like, I mean, How to Make a Monster is an actual like B-50 horror movie. Mm-hmm. So he made it sound like that as well. Meet the Creepers, an amazing song. Ballad of Resurrection Joe and Rosa Whore. Whatever. Sounds great. What Lurks on Channel X, though, I think is super underrated. I don't think anyone's listened to that song. And they should.
I got to listen to this. I don't think I've listened to the whole thing like all the way through.
Yeah. Anyway, I will give it to Hellbilly Deluxe over Astrocreep 2000 only for the fact that there's a little bit more variety to it. Oh, Astrocreep 2000. Amazing. Now, when you talk about like long titles, like so 13 Tales of Cadavers Cavorting Inside the Spook Show International, Astrocreep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction, and Other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head.
Like, so good.
So good.
So good.
So many
so good.
Words.
So confusing.
It's so good. It's like, it works, man. It works. It's good.
Wicked.
All right. So for my metal magic, I'll touch briefly on two albums first, just to go back with what you were talking about, Matt, about pairings. And you like Rick Rubin and Slayer, but you know who also worked with Rick Rubin? And I totally forgot about this album and the fact that I was obsessed with this album forever. And I listened to it because every song was so good and they're so quick. Rick Rubin and System of a Down. Toxicity.
Oh, yeah.
Toxicity.
You love Toxicity.
Front to back is, to me, is amazing.
It is utterly amazing.
And there's like 14 songs on that. Yeah. And like every song, like it's because it's like, it's not that every song sounds the same, but because the, like, what's the idea? Not proof of concept or something, but like they were just like, every song leads into the next one so perfectly. Even though they're different, they still sound like System songs. It's like circus metal or something. They created this sound.
Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love Toxicity. Another one I'll mention briefly because you put Home on your list. Of course I love. But to me, honestly, and I mean, it's the next album, but Animosity to me is a perfect album by Seven Dust.
It is really
good. I love every song on it. Every song has a perfect chorus. I love a good, energizing, like, lifting up kind of chorus, like just huge, like emotion kind of chorus. And every song to me on Animosity is like that. Like, what's that song? I'm forgetting other titles, but like Angel's Son to me is also one of the greatest songs ever written.
Yeah,
like that's top 10 song for me. You know what I mean? So that's on that album. But the album I will pick for Metal Magic, very important album to me, in terms of like broadening my metal horizons. Like, you know, the thrash, I got into metal with thrash metal. So you got Sepultura and Metallica and that like paved the way. I don't know if they kind of proggy, but I don't know. Now that I just love this band so much that I don't even know what to call them anymore because they just sound like Mastodon. And the album is from 2004 and it's Leviathan.
Of course.
And you know what else I love in like a perfect album? A good concept and a good like a story. Like the whole thing is an experience. Yes. Like the whole thing is a story. So this is obviously based on the Moby Dick novel. Like this kind of like they have songs called like Iron Tusk and I am Ahab, Sea Beast, Blood and Thunder. Like it's such a high concept metal album.
Yeah.
But every song is great. And Iron Tusk is one of the great metal songs ever, in my opinion. But yeah, it just, again, like every song leads into one another and it's just kind of like goes on this like path and it's just such a great experience front to back. And just like, but it's a weird album, you know?
It is weird, but it's amazing.
It's a journey.
It is a journey. But I find with Mastodon, it's much like Pink Floyd, like it's a literary experience.
Mm.
Yeah. Like you have to go song for song, chapter by chapter, because it's greater parts of the whole or whatever, or the whole is some of the parts
for
or
sure,
whatever. Yeah. It's literally an experience.
Well, you can listen to each song individually, you know, the whole thing does work as an experience.
Yeah. I think it amps up the experience to listen to it all as one though. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you know, when you it'd be like taking a chapter out of a book and just reading that one chapter. Like, you know, now that I've heard the whole album before, or read the whole entire book, I kind of understand it. But it works better as a whole.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Very cool.
So there's three.
There's three.
There you go. Wow. Well, there
you
go. Good
you made
for
up
you,
for
man.
Your other deficits.
Your other deficit. So what's the, are we into a final category?
I think we're in the final category, which I
have a new category.
Okay. So my final category was alt rock awesomeness.
Okay.
Okay.
Because like, I was trying to think of like, you know, again, trying to keep with the theme of like, you know, new albums and then old albums.
Drunk Cat.
Cats. So I mean, it was kind of hard to you know. Yeah, I couldn't say like new wave because I don't know. I don't listen to any new wave. But
new
wave. So I went with alt rock, and I think that both the bands are definitely alt rock. So the new album is a band that I got introduced to by our good friend Ken. It was a couple of years ago, and I've just been absolutely obsessed with these guys because actually they do on average about two albums a year, and every single one of them is vastly different. Like they'll do a metal album, then they'll do a blues album, then they'll do a jazz album, then they'll do this. So the band is King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, and the album is called Flying Microtonal Banana.
Is this the metal one?
No. I like the metal one, but Flying Microtonal Banana is They
rubber baby buggy bumpers.
I know, kind of sounds like that. No, but they actually use microtonal instruments. So a microtonal bass, microtonal guitar, and created these amazing songs with these weird scales that like actually almost remind me of like the System of a Down type of feel where it's like, you know, these scales and these, you know, notes and the ways to put it together that are not typical in Western music. But man, like Flying Microtonal Banana from beginning to end is a sonic fucking journey. Like, you know, it starts off with a song called Rattlesnake, which literally like some, the whole entire, it's rattlesnake, 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 rattle, like, but it, in microtonal, like, and oh man, it's so fucking good. The whole entire album, every fucking song, again, just leads into one another.
Be honest.
Yeah.
How much weed do you have to smoke to listen to this album?
Not a lot. I don't think so. I mean, you know, I don't think so. But
you're attached to this album.
I am attached to this album. It just hit me in that way that I just like, you know, and that was the first album that I listened to by them, and then just kind of fell in love with the rest of the, you know, the rest of their catalog.
Speaking of hitting, how's the chocolate hit?
Oh, I just did a half a bite of one square, so 2.5 milligrams. It's like a tiny little bit of weight on the head. It's really nothing, but it's good.
It's my twinkle.
Yeah. I didn't want to get too messed up. Start like second guessing every single sentence that comes out of my mouth. Wait, what are we talking about again?
That's okay. So this is a band I've never heard of before.
Come on. One of the greatest band names ever. King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Like,
it does roll off the tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So that's my first modern for alt rock awesomeness. My classic is Talking Heads, Speaking in Tongues.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Like I know they could be considered new wave, but I think 100%. They're actually alt rock.
But yes.
It's such a broad category.
I mean,
it really is.
Speaking in Tongues, like, you know, you've got Burning Down the House. Like,
Burning Down the House.
You've got, you know, Naive Melody on there. You've got, I'm trying to think what the other tracks are actually on there. Let me just have it over there. Girlfriend is Better. Like, Swamp, which is one of, Swamp is such a dirty fucking song that's on this album, but it's like.
It's swampy?
It's swampy. Like, just David Byrne's, like, kind of vocals, you know, that are on there. And to be honest, This Must Be the Place is my favorite song of all time. Like, I could listen to that a million fucking times. And I've actually, so the live version from the Stop Making Sense tour is, I think, the perfect version of that particular song. And I've told everyone in my family, my wife, everything. I was like, that's the song I want playing at my funeral. Like, I want, because it's so happy and it's so joyous and it's so uplifting that I don't want people to cry. I want people to enjoy this amazing song. So anyway, Speaking in Tongues by Talking
Very
Heads.
Very cool. The Talking Heads album that I own is More Songs About Buildings and Food.
Yeah.
From 1978. Yeah, I own that one. I almost brought it just for the fact that I know that you like Talking Heads.
Yep.
But I chose Tears for Fear, counterpart to that kind of category. Yeah. Cool.
Awesome.
Cool.
That's my alt rock.
Alt rock awesomeness. Okay, so I'm going to treat Green Day Dookie with the same kind of category or kind of elimination as we would with
all rock.
Yes, but I'm gonna take it out of the ranking.
Oh,
like we would with the Beatles. For it's like an obvious pick for like perfect albums.
That is
or
a perfect
whatever.
Album though.
It is, but it's not my perfect album. Okay. But it is a great album. Every song is perfect on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if anyone knows me, my perfect Green Day album is Insomnia.
Yeah, that is my actually perfect Green Day album.
And I don't know why, other than the fact that it's more aggressive.
Yep.
And it doesn't let up. Like, there is the only song that drops on that one is Panic Song, but even then, it's only dropping because the guitar is missing for the first half of the song.
I remember specifically my dad, like, begging my dad to drive me to Zeller's.
Yes.
To buy Insomniac.
Yeah.
And I remember walking through the whole entire fucking store and just to pick that up and like look at it and take that all
it's just
in.
With glory, right? Oh, yeah. You know, when you're holding the thing that you need, you're like, God, I got it.
Yeah.
Right?
And the moment is here, yeah.
But like every song on this is so good. Armitage Shank. Right into the brat. Mama, dad don't look so hot these days. I get it over the hill. St- stuck with me, which I've said before, it's not the correct stuck with me, but we'll go with it.
Yeah.
Geek Stink Breath, No Pride, Babs Uvula Who? Bam, bam, bam. 86 is my favorite song. Yeah,
There's No Return from 86.
Oh my God, that's one of my favorite songs ever. Panic Song, Stuart in the Avenue, Brain Stew Jaded, Westbound Sign, Tightwad Hill, and of course, Walking Contradiction. The songs that you don't know are still amazing on it.
Oh, yeah.
They fit so perfectly in the album because they have the aggression. They also have the same vibe as Dookie, but there's something more driving this album than Dookie. And I think Dookie is because, you know, it was right place and right time for a producer and a band to work together on creating something profitable for both. But I don't know, Insomniac's got the band driving the bus.
Talking about a pretty amazing follow-up to like a hit record. Like that's
true.
That's a really hard thing to do as a band is like, well, okay, you've got a hit record, now make another one.
The sophomore slump is
sophomore.
Because it's like they're pressured to recreate something that made them popular, but, but with Insomniac, it's just like... Yeah. Front to back, it's like, oh you want this again, okay, it's just everyone's like, oh my God, this is amazing.
But here then comes another one.
But what a departure going into Nimrod, but an obvious evolution.
We need to try new things
in a band that wants to, you know, not disappoint people but start something new. And I think that's something I really admire about Green Day, despite the fact that stuff I got.
It's pop punk now, I think, like newer stuff.
Yeah. So my counterpart to this, I'm going classic.
Okay.
And I'm going to say this is definitely new wave, but more on the alt rock side. And it is Elvis Costello, this year's model.
Such a good fucking
Don't know this album at all.
Yeah. I mean, you might know Pump It Up. Pump It Up.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes.
But like this guitar groove.
Yeah.
Every song on this record, again, we go back to perfect albums that make people move.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we put this on tonight after we stop recording, you will love this album.
I'll move.
You'll dance.
You'll move.
Oh, you'll move.
There's a time period where Elvis Costello and The Attraction put out banger one after another. But this album is very, very. And I was blown away when I bought it and put it on. I knew it was one of the albums I should listen to before I die.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put that on, I was floored.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that my dad didn't listen to something like this to bring me up on. But it's one of those albums where I'm like, Danny, you got to.
Yeah, buddy, check this out.
And what I really love about this vinyl, talk it through here, is instead of Columbia Records around the print, it's Costello. Weird. So it looks like Columbia, but it does actually look, says Costello.
Yeah, forgot about that classic like Columbia Records logo. Vinyl.
Very
logo.
Cool. I love collecting vinyl, and I love physical media, as you know, because I've got a ton of VHS.
Pristine looking vinyl you have.
But when we talk about like, is this alt rock? Is this new wave? I think that's what alt rock is that it's alternative to whatever you expect it to be.
See, I always like new wave. I always associate new wave with a little bit more like synthesizers and maybe like processed drums and that kind of stuff, right?
Of course.
So like that's why I was kind of on the fence because Talking Heads certainly have like, you know, synthesizers. It's a little bit different. Like, but I mean, the Police were classified as new wave.
Mm. But you listen to the Clash and they call that punk and I'm like, where's what?
Yeah.
Even like, early Police is like punk.
It is pure punk, right? Yeah. So, I mean, again, like you're going back and classifying it, like, you know, you're painting with a broad brush on things, right? So, I mean, I honestly don't care about like genres of music. If I fucking like it, I fucking like it.
But if we are going to compare album to album, I think Dookie and this year's model sit super well together.
Oh, yeah, man.
You can hear how one artist has influenced another.
Yeah, you'd hear the evolution in that for sure.
Like, oh, yeah. Like, oh, you got three chords? Great, let's run with it.
Yeah, I got three chords.
Yeah.
I got you three chords right here.
I got you three chords right here. All right, so there you go. Insomniac and this year's model.
All right. Now I do have two. And this works perfectly now for this category because I do have my two albums for alt rock awesomeness. Leading into, I'm going to talk about this album first. Then this next, the one after it is my number one perfect album, perfect album of all time. But we'll start here. And I was like, because we were talking about how broad the category of alt rock is. And it's like, But on Wikipedia, this does say genre, alternative rock.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also power pop. Mm. Emo. Mm. Geek rock. Mm. What do you think?
I think you, I think you're going somewhere where each album is a color. Except for this one.
No, this is a color.
What the hell this one is?
Yeah, really.
I'm gonna make a beat out of that.
Okay, so we'll keep going with the clues. Released in 1994, widely considered by a lot of people to be one of the greatest years in music history.
Yeah.
In the Rolling Stone list of the 500 greatest albums of all time, it is 294. Mm. Not really. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyways, oh yeah, so one thing I noticed about this album, it's not the chocolate.
Definitely the chocolate.
You know, remember how we talked about with movies, it's like your favorite movies versus the best movie. So this is actually, I'm going to say it's my favorite album, like in that way. It's my Back to the Future of music albums.
Yeah, you go back to it, literally.
And it's Weezer's self-titled, the Blue album.
Right. I knew you were going to say that.
10 songs, every song is good. I don't skip any. A lot of great singles, but like every song is just, I don't know. And also I love Weezer over the years I don't know if they're trying to replicate what they did with the Blue album or they're just, I don't know. Something about the Blue album is like a band, even though they're so young, they just came in like fully formed in what makes them unique. Like that Weezer sound. And you don't hear a lot of bands doing it. No one sounds like Weezer. And maybe that's because of Rivers Cuomo's voice. Maybe that's just because of how he can write chord progressions or whatever. But there's a weird like sadness or hauntiness to his melodies in mixed in with pop, grunge kind of guitars. I don't know. The Blue album, every song is just beautiful to me. Like in the garage, great, just ode to like the days of playing as a young band in your garage with your friends. Even the inside cover, the booklet or whatever, that great picture of just two guitars, a bass, a mic stand, a simple drum set, like in their actual garage.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, there's something else just so pure about that. Just
humbling,
like,
too.
Just like four guys playing instruments, not really a lot of nothing extra, you know.
Mm.
And that's Weezer. So, I mean, the Blue album to me is just beautiful. Love it.
The Blue album, I mean, that is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It is a perfect, I think it's time and place. I think that's another big thing, too. Is that the success of Weezer was that they came out at the right time. And yes, 94 is an amazing year for music, but especially in the alt rock category. Mm. Like think of all the bands that not only had been around and didn't really get the credit they deserve, but then debut the brand new album,
mm-hmm.
first experience of a band. And you're like, what is the song Buddy Holly? And now it's a part of pop culture moving forward. Like,
and that was another thing that seemed to happen with, I don't know, like how, like right place, right time, whatever, like the perfect lightning in a bottle that happens for bands to get to a certain place. But like everything, like they got Rick Ocasek to produce their album, like their debut album that David, like the DGC, like David Geffen Company, like sought them out. And they're like, we're going to sign you, like dream signing experience for like a young band. Then they get Spike Jonze to make a music video for Buddy Holly. And it's like a Happy Days throwback. And it like won a bunch of MTV. It's like a perfect storm to a great album. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
For a debut album from a band. It's kind of crazy.
It cemented their legacy, but it also it introduced this kind of like nerd rock culture.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like, it's okay to be nerdy. Like you think of like Big Bang Theory and Stranger Things and like, it's just like we're still living in Weezer.
It's almost like, yeah, you know how like the metal kids or the punk rock kids,
right?
They're like the outcasts,
of course,
but they're like almost like we're angry outcasts. We want to be outcasts. Whereas I think maybe with Weezer, what tapped into it was like you said, like for lack of a better word, the nerdy people, the people maybe too scared to say that they're a part of a group or something. I don't know. Like, the timid, maybe the little more sensitive crowd.
Like, how would you be a front person being so timid?
Yeah.
Right.
And he was Rivers Cuomo has talked about it a lot, how he was just like, you know, crippling anxiety. And he's just like, he's not an extrovert. Let's put it that way. I mean, he might have turned into it. I have been over the years, but
well, I mean, my good friend Adam Marchand, he's that person too. Yeah. He's very quiet. Once you get to know him, obviously he will talk to you like a normal person, but in front of a crowd, you're like, holy shit. Like, I can't believe that voice is coming out of him. Mm-hmm. That's the same kind of syndrome where it's like, you know, you put a mic in front of someone, they've got something to say.
Mm-hmm. And I've sat here quiet the whole entire time while you guys have been talking about Weezer.
Welcome back, John.
I'm still here.
You don't like Weezer?
Oh, no, I do love Weezer. Oh. It's just you guys were like, I didn't want to interrupt the conversation. You guys were just good. Like very geeking good. Out over the band. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Wow. That's cool.
All right. Here we go.
Last one, Kyle.
Genre, according to Wikipedia, does say alternative rock, so it still qualifies.
Okay.
But it also says industrial.
I know what you're talking about.
Because we've had this discussion.
Yeah.
This is the perfect album to me.
What year?
94.
Okay.
March 8th, 1994.
Industrial.
Yeah. So.
Right.
And this speaks to my love of concept, detailing the destruction of a man from the beginning to his death by suicide. His downward spiral, would you say? And so Trent Reznor had to go to the house that Sharon Tate was murdered in to make this album. That's a real fact. He went to the Manson murder house and wrote with and produced with Flood, The Downward Spiral. A perfect album, a perfect concept, perfect execution. Yep. Every song is great. Also, just like when artists is like, this is who I am, or this is the music I make, I don't compromise for no one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want me to make an album? I'll make you an album, but you're not going to tell me how to make the album. So I'm going to go to the friggin' Sharon Tate house and just make this insane, intense, like gears grinding, machine sounding, dark, sad, brooding metal concoction hybrid. There's so much going on in the Downward Spiral. It's like,
my God.
And then you have like classics like Closer.
Yeah.
And you have Hurt, obviously. Mm. What a weird ending to an, like, the whole album is just, oh shit, just so intense and like heavy.
Yeah.
And then Hurt is just such a like a whisper or something, like a.
But it's, yeah, it I don't know. It does just passes you over.
I love that. And that song, A Warm Place, and weird little instrumental, like textural things that he'll like put in there, like A Warm Place. I just, me and my friends growing up, like we were just for that little time, you know, when you're obsessed. When an album comes out and you're kind of just obsessed with them for the longest time, and we're like, man, A Warm Place. We just loved A Warm Place, like this minute and 30 second long, like interlude in the middle of the Downward Spiral. But man, I love this album. So yeah, if Weezer's Blue Album is my Back to the Future, Nine Inch Nails is the Downward Spiral is my Taxi Driver.
Oh, wow.
So
good comparison.
Interesting segue into movie references here. So in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, universe, The Downward Spiral probably wouldn't have gotten made because Sharon Tate not get murdered.
That's true.
So Trent Reznor might have not gone to that home to make the fucking album.
That's true.
Wow.
Damn you, Quentin Tarantino.
God, that's damn awesome. It.
But now, being a Manson fan from the 90s, obviously there's a relationship between Reznor and Manson that has obviously dissolved since, but super strong. I was never a Nine Inch Nails fan, despite being a Manson fan, but I was more of a Antichrist Superstar fan than I was Manson.
Mm.
Just for song on that album was perfectly produced, but that was a collaboration between Manson, the producer, Sean Bevan, and obviously Reznor, the label, Nothing Records, that put the album out. Obviously, both with substance abuse, both with struggling with stardom and kind of trying to produce a Black Mirror product for society. That time period for 90s industrial alt metal was perfect.
Yeah.
Like it was the right timing for it.
For sure.
It wasn't it wasn't hair metal and it wasn't grunge. It was the fuck you to to trying to package something aggressive.
Yeah.
And they were able to at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So that was our perfect album discussion.
So many
we
albums.
Could probably go on for days but at this point, this is just perfect albums, not great albums. It's just perfect banger.
I mean, I'd be really interested to see the folks that actually listen to this, we know we got folks that are listening in Canada and the United States and
Norway
and all Finland. Over the world. I mean, let us know what your, like, you know, perfect albums are. And are they different than ours? Or do you agree with our picks? Like, do you think we're batshit fucking crazy? Like, or do you agree with it? Like,
I mean, yeah, it's all personal. But yeah, of course, everyone's taste is going to be different. But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. If you haven't, hit the follow button.
Yeah.
Because we try to do this once a week. We're on a good track record. Because we took a break from December to about May, and then we came back and we haven't stopped.
Had to retool.
Retool, I'll retool you.
All right, so for Nostalgia Drunk Podcast, I'm Kyle, saying I've got an electric guitar, I play my stupid songs, I write these stupid words, and I love everyone waiting there for me. Yes, I do.
And I'm Matt from Nostalgia Drunk Podcast, saying, Ready Blood from a Lacerated Sky.
This is John for Nostalgia Drunk Podcast saying, shout, shout, let it all out.
These are the things I can do without. Come on. I'm talking to you. So come on.
Love it.